Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. A common theme in cults is the cult leader's total control of his people. Unfortunately, false prophets inhabit the church as well as cults. Today, an exposé of the ways these people manipulate those who follow them. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Our series is on Who Are You to Judge? Learning to distinguish between truths, half-truths, and lies. Turn with us to 2 Corinthians chapter 11 as Erwin Lutzer speaks on judging false prophets and the methods they use to control people.
Here in the Chicago area, a man left a church and took many people with him, and he was such a false prophet. So demonic, it was unbelievable the control that he had on people. I mean, he controlled their finances and everything. And he met with me because of a certain issue, and he wanted me to bow at his coffee table and to pray and to confess my sins and basically come under his authority. And when I said I would not, he said, "I already see you fall," he said. "I already see you fall." Wow, what power. The Bible says don't be intimidated by these false prophets who say God has spoken, but God has not spoken by them. So there's intimidation. There's exploitation. Send me your credit cards. Send me your debts. We will have a bonfire. We'll burn them. And then after they are burned, God will miraculously, he'll pay your mortgages. I was watching this one time and I couldn't believe it. They said that we have testimonies of mortgages being paid, that the people sent their check to the mortgage company and the mortgage company sent back and said, "Maybe you don't realize, but your house is already paid off. All that you need to do is to send some seed money to me, and then all this prosperity will hit you." Have you ever noticed that some of these people, in their large audiences, have you ever noticed that oftentimes they have a lot of poor people? You have to understand why. Because the poor people are there saying, "If I just had as much faith as this teacher, if I just had as much faith, if I walked as closely with God as he did, then I could have his wealth too, and his health, and God would prosper me. And I wouldn't have to watch my budget because God would come along and just pay." I mean, what a deal. They exploit you, Paul says. What I find very interesting is that in the early church, there were long discussions as to whether or not a rich person could even be saved because of the words of Jesus. They said, "Can a rich person be saved or not?" Because Christ said it is very difficult. It's like going through the eye of a needle. And today we have preachers telling us that everybody should be wealthy. Couldn't you imagine when we go to Belarus this afternoon? We won't get there this afternoon, but in a few days. And I go to that pastor's conference and I preach that God wants everybody to be wealthy. And what's wrong with you folks sitting in your grubby old clothes here? This is a message that you can only get away with it in America, where it's combined with capitalism and wealth. And yet it's preached, and people come and they bring their notebooks to find some new way to get wealth that they think God has in store for them, if only his teacher helps them know how to do it. Number five, he has his own way of self-exaltation. I'm thinking here of the phrase, yes, he enslaves you, he exploits you, he takes advantage of you, Paul says, and pushes himself forward. That's the phrase. And then he says, slaps you on the face. How do they do it? They do it by control. Now, every false teacher wants control. Now, if he can control the people directly, of course, that's best. But if he has a television audience, he still wants control. And he wants to set himself up as one with awesome power. Believe me, folks, I saw this with my own eyes. Woman came forward in one of these meetings and she said, "I am childless. My husband and I have tried to have children and we have not been able to have children." And the evangelist, if we call him such, said, "What do you want, a boy or a girl?" She said, "A boy." He said, "It'll be a boy." "What color eyes do you want? I want blue eyes. He'll have blue eyes. Do you want a spring baby or a fall baby? I want a baby born in the spring. He'll be born in the spring. And then he said, if you'd have asked for twins, you'd have gotten it. Wow. Imagine somebody who can command God. God, it's got to be a boy. It's got to be blue eyes. It's got to be exactly like the mail order catalog that we have sent up to the sky, and God will do it for you. And everybody, oh, the power of this man. Oof, if we could just touch him. Here's the interesting thing. Suppose there is no boy, or suppose it's a girl with brown eyes. Are the people going to say, you know, we have just been duped by a false prophet? No, because the false prophets have thought of all of these things. What the people are being trained to say is, oh, if only we had had more faith. If only we had trusted God more, God would have done it. It's not his fault. They probably are sending him money next month. Amazing, amazing. Heartbreaking. Another way they do it is by the way in which they speak. That's how these people did it. Now, they contrasted themselves with Paul, and I want you to know, in chapter 10, verse 10, this is what they said about Paul. For some say his letters are weighty and forceful. He's a pretty good writer, but in person he's unimpressive and his speech amounts to nothing. That's what they were saying. They said, Paul doesn't know rhetoric like we do. He can't manage it. In fact, there's one early report, we don't know if it's true or not, that Paul was short, balding, and bow-legged. Imagine him for an evangelist on television. Just imagine him. Who wants to bother with this guy? Give us the people who know how to speak. Give us the people who, when they go into the pulpit, change their voice and begin that nasal response to work the crowd. Give us somebody like that, not this boring speaker over here who has nothing to share except Jesus and him crucified. Well, how do you think Paul stacked up with these super apostles? Pretty badly. Look at what he said in verse 21. He said, to my shame, I admit that we're too weak for that. See, they were saying Paul is weak in comparison with us. He says, you're absolutely right. We're so weak. He's being sarcastic. We're too weak to slap you in the face and to exploit you and to use you and to do it for money. Yeah, that's right. What he was saying is, I am pretty impressive in comparison to these people. Imagine. Some of us who preach the gospel, I mean, there's no comparison. We don't get the crowds. We can't touch people and have them collapse on the platform so that ushers have to catch them. We're just preaching Jesus in great weakness and humility and brokenness and tears. That's all we're doing. That's all we have to offer. Do you see the decision that the Corinthians had to make here? The decision that the Corinthians had to make is this. They said, who are we going to follow? Are we going to follow Paul, who made tents and earned his living and didn't know where his next month's rent was coming from? Do we want to follow him? Or do we want to follow the people who have the gold chains and the Rolex watches and the beautiful cars and the lovely homes? Who do we want to be like? That was the decision. And what Paul says is this, if you're going to be like me, you're going to have to suffer. And that's why the rest of the chapter, beginning in verse 16, I will not take time to read it, talks about Paul's suffering, how that he was in prison and whipped and beaten and the whole bit. And he's saying that that is the mark of a true apostle. It is not the gold chains. It is not the ability to speak. It is not the ability to command crowds and get money. What's the bottom line here? First of all, number one, whenever you add to the gospel, you subtract from it. If you say you have to be baptized to be saved, you diminish the cross. If you say, well, I have to be a good person to be saved, you totally misunderstand the cross. If you're saying that our main message is not Jesus and him crucified, it's get healed and get money, you've got another Jesus, you've got another gospel. You're in a totally different arena, something else. Because the gospel is that Jesus died for sinners to reconcile us to a holy God, because we are miserable sinners who need his grace. And that message is not going over as well as send your cards to me and we'll burn your mortgage and it'll be paid for you. It's just not where people are at. So, you know, what are we? We're unimpressive and we don't have the money. We don't have the wherewithal. We're not that good communicators like those other guys, the super apostles. Secondly, the mark of a true prophet, the mark of a true prophet is suffering. I want to say this to you. When you're sitting there watching television and you're seeing these guys parade their stuff, and I'm not talking about all of them. I'm sure that there are many of them who are true prophets, who are true ministers of the gospel. In fact, I know there are some. But ask yourself this question. Is he calling me to suffer in this world, or is he telling me that I can have it all now, heaven right now, with all the health and with all the wealth? That's the mark, because the rest of this chapter is Paul is saying, I'm sorry, but if you're looking for a message from me that does not include suffering, you're listening to the wrong guy. Talk to those other guys who've got it all figured out, who can command God to give them wealth, but don't talk to me. And so at the end of the day, folks, in this world of so much confusion, what we need to do is to ask ourselves the question, are the people whom we are listening to, are the people whom we are supporting with our money, do they have a right Jesus, a right gospel? Are they filled with the Spirit rather than the confusion of demonic spirits to be able to do such wonderful and marvelous things? Are they exploiters, making promises that not even God has chosen to give? Because our world is full of it. I end where I began. Beware of false prophets. For outwardly they appear like sheep and lambs, but inwardly they are ravenous, greedy, controlling wolves. And they're out there to get you and to get me, all under the guise of preaching Bible, 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 Jesus, 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 but they're false to the core.
Well, my friend, this is Pastor Lutzer, and as you can tell, I'm very passionate about this business. Because sometimes when a false prophet comes to town, those of us who are in the ministry, we have to pick up the pieces. Because there are members from the church who will go to that false prophet with certain expectations. They come back disappointed. They come back with a lot of questions. I would very much encourage you to get the CD or possibly the book that will be talked about at the end of this broadcast. Because in the process, you will be armed with important truth that will help you in today's very, very confused world. And meanwhile, let's keep the main message, Jesus Christ and Him crucified.
Today, Dr. Erwin Lutzer concluded Judging False Prophets, the fourth message in a 10-part series on Who Are You to Judge? A Study in Discernment. These days, so-called miracles abound, especially on TV. Next time, don't miss Judging Miracles. Who Are You to Judge? Is in print as a book by Dr. Lutzer, a book we'd like to send as our thank you for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.